Orleans. This is Music Inside Out. I'm Gwen Tompkins. Mid-century modern describes a design style that makes the world look more about the future than the past. In the middle of the 20th century, people wanted their homes and possessions to appear playful, colorful, and easy to move around. Popular music was headed in the same direction. Guests of Music Inside Out often talk about being influenced by songs from the era, which saxophonist Charles Neville says helped make the bad times better, particularly during segregation.
So it was Elvis Presley's band and B.B. King's band.
Mm-hmm.
Stage was in the middle of the hall, black audience on one side, white audience on the other.
Mid-century modern music with Charles Neville, Walter Wolfman Washington, Nadja Salerno Sonnenberg, Helen Gillet, and Herlin Riley. After the break. It's no accident that rock and roll and rhythm and blues dominated the airwaves after World War II. Back then, the entire Western Hemisphere was changing and moving away from anything that looked or sounded heavy. People designed houses made almost entirely of windows, or homewares out of colorful plastics, or a chair shaped like an egg into a usable piece of art. In music, pre-war orchestras gave way to smaller, more energetic combos, and musicians spun simple arrangements into songs that made young people and their parents turn up the radio and dance. Whipped cream, anyone? Guests of Music Inside Out nearly always talk about songs from the 1950s and 60s as inspiration for their own work. So this week, we're cocking our ears to the past and going mid-century modern. Before there was a guitarist called Walter Wolfman Washington, there was Edward Washington, a scrawny little boy born in New Orleans in 1943. Like a lot of skinny kids, Washington grew up fighting children who were much bigger than he was. And when he became a musician, he brought that fighting spirit onto the bandstand.
My nickname was Wawa.
Really?
That was my first nickname.
Wawa?
When I was going to school, yeah. I used to fight a lot.
Oh,
you see, by me being small, you know, mm-hmm. and a lot of the cats were trying to pick on me, and I had to really be crazy, you know, pick up anything, just whatever I can do just to keep them off me. You know?
Gee.
And as I got older, a good friend of mine's, he told me, he said, Jenny, I'm going to show you how to fight. So he showed me how to use what I have, and then I started watching this martial arts stuff, and we just got off into it. So, you know, as I got older, I started learning how to play the guitar. And when they had this club called Topaz, and it was on 2nd and Danielle,
mm-hmm.
that's where all the cats, this was way back, like 57, 58, something like that. And all the musicians at that time would go there, guitar players, horn players, drummers, bass players, guitar, all that stuff. And I would always be challenging them. So I got the name Wawa. I would war with all of them. Recording was Mickey Mouse Boarding House.
Mickey Mouse Boarding House.
Mm.
Well, how does it go?
I'm in Mickey Mouse boarding house. My wife got wine and put me out. I'm standing on the corner, playing it cool. When cars hit the ball, made a crazy crew. I'm in Mickey Mouse boarding house. I'm in Mickey Mouse boarding house. I'm in Mickey Mouse boarding house. Please somebody come and get me out. Oh yeah.
Yeah, that was my very first recording.
Oh, so back in the 60s.
Yeah, back then.
Yeah.
That thing scared the shit out of me. I didn't know how to do it. But I went and did it anyway.
When my wife called out with a crazy shout, that's him. He done me wrong. Put him in a boarding house where he belong. He done me wrong. He treated me mean. Give him a cell that's nice and clean. I'm in Mickey Mouse boarding house. I'm in Mickey Mouse boarding house. I'm in Mickey Mouse boarding house. Please somebody come and get me out. Oh yeah.
That was weird back then. Yeah. Then I had on the other side.
It's been a lovely day. Then I spend with you. It's been a lovely day. I don't want it to end.
One of them things, you know. Now, I wrote that one. It's about a girl I had just met. And we went on a picnic. That's when at Lincoln Beach opened in them days. You know?
I was a kid. That was the beach all the black people went to during segregation here in New Orleans.
Man, we spent the whole day. And at the end of that, I said, wait a minute, what's your name?
So you're spending the whole day with this girl, yeah. And you don't know her name.
I mean, from 12 o'clock to about 6 o'clock that evening. I've been calling her Dolly. He's just, sweetheart, all day long. Yeah, what's your name? My name's Viola. I said, oh, God.
Viola.
Viola.
Okay, well, we won't forget it now.
Oh, no, no.
We'll remember it.
Oh.
Well, I have to say that even though you, Walter Wolfman Washington, have been known as a great funk master for all of these years, you know, it seems as if, you know, you really are just a true romantic at heart.
I've always been that way all my life. And by growing up the way I did, you know, I haven't lost that love, you know. You know, people go for years and years and years and never find. I've been fortunate to find a couple of people that I have really felt good with, you know. And it's just been wonderful, but I'm still in that stage. I ain't gonna give up. No. I'm too young for that.
Sure, it's been a lovely day. I'm spent with you.
That was Walter Wolfman Washington. As a young guitarist, he toured with the 1960s hitmaker Lee Dorsey. Now, classical violinist Yascha Heifetz was not exactly a hitmaker, but in the 1960s, his music helped inspire a family to move from Rome, Italy, to Cherry Hill, New Jersey. That's where violin virtuoso Nadja Salerno Sonnenberg began to absorb American culture. And between the old and the new music, her family was all over the place.
I feel the room swaying, for the band's playing one of my old favorite songs from way back when. So bridge that gap, fellas, find me an empty lap, fellas, Dolly, I'll never go away again.
Strangers in the night, exchanging glances, wondering in the night, what were the chances we'd be sharing love before the night was through?
Buona chitarra mia, Maria desiderata.
And my grandfather was all about the opera, and my brother loved Led Zeppelin. So this is what I was going on in my house, along with all that American stuff.
That makes sense. I mean, Led Zeppelin is operatic in its own way, you know?
Yeah, I guess.
Operatic guitar.
Okay.
Hey, hey, mama said the way you move gonna make you sweat, gonna make you groove.
I don't know how you would say that in Italian.
No, there's no translation for that. No way.
I mean, you've said that reading music is like solving a mystery. For most people who do not read music, it all looks like it's there. You know, it all looks like it's there. What are the missing clues on the composition?
I think the entirety of playing a piece is a mystery. In so many ways, there's so many different components. Okay, so let's say you can play all those notes perfectly.
Yeah.
Then what are you going to do with this piece? Where's the beginning of this phrase? Where does this phrase develop? Where's the climax of this phrase? And how do you segue into the next? And that's a small little phrase. Then you keep pushing back, pull out, look at the big picture. How does that one phrase fit into that entire movement? And how does that movement fit into the whole concerto?
Wow.
And then at the end, you have to say to yourself, how do I feel about this piece? And how can I convey that? And that's the emotional part, and that's the part where teachers don't teach that, or they don't inspire that, most teachers. You look at the sequence of events and just trying to learn and from nothing to performance of one piece. It's wonderful, you know? It's like building something from nothing, building a fantastic meal from nothing,
yes.
Making bread from nothing. Building a house from nothing, and then looking at the result. On the other hand, it's wonderful to know the history of the composer. What was, you know, you take a composer like Shostakovich, and you know, wow, you, great
the
to know what was going on with
the pressure that man was under Soviet Russia.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. But it does, if you have musical instinct, reading five books about him, if you don't have musical instinct, is not going to make you play that concerto well. It's not. I'm sorry.
Yeah.
I feel like I can say those things in New Orleans.
No, that makes sense. And in fact, Maxim Shostakovich, you know, he was the symphony director here for a long time.
I know. I worked with him here, and I recorded his father's concerto with him.
There's a listener who really wants to know more about violin. If you had a little playlist you would suggest, what would be on that playlist?
Right off the top of my head, I would pick an encore album. And the reason for that is because it's going to provide you with the most variety. So mine has Mozart, Rachmaninoff, Saint-Saëns, so much. I don't even remember. Chrysler, of course, is on there. So, and then you can hear the difference in these compositions, the difference in the compositional styles. Also, you would hear, hopefully, an album of virtuosic playing that may really pique your interest, but also the soulful, gorgeous sound, slow playing of that, that the violin can provide. Give yourself the most choices. I think, like, if you were to listen to Tchaikovsky Violin Concerto, then you're in there for 30 minutes. And you may love it. But if you listen to 2 or 3 minutes vignettes of different compositions, different styles, I think you would have more of a choice, obviously.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Wow. If you're deeply in love?
Does this have to be violin music?
No.
If you're deeply in love, listen to the love duet from Madame Butterfly. I swear to God, if I'm hungry and I hear Dean Martin sing When your eye hits on the pine, that's amore.
When the world seems to shine like you've had too much wine, that's amore. Bells will ring, ting-a-ling-a-ling, ting-a-ling-a-ling, and you'll sing Vita Bella. Hearts will play tippy-tippy-tay, tippy-tippy-tay, like a guitarandella.
Okay, when you really want to celebrate a great moment in your life.
You're really putting me on the spot.
We're going to go out on this one, because this is a great moment for us.
You're going to hate what popped into my mind. We are the champions. I'm so sorry. That's what, but you should have given me some notice. I would come up with some good stuff, but that's what popped into my mind. We are the champions. I should have come up with something classical. Damn.
I've taken my bows and my curtain calls. You brought me fame and fortune and everything that goes with it. I thank you all. But it's been no bed of roses, no pleasure cruise. I consider it a challenge before the whole human race, and I ain't gonna lose. And I need to go on. We are the champions, my friends, and we'll keep on fighting till.
For a classical violinist, that Nadja Salerno Sonnenberg has one heck of a record collection. Coming up, Charles Neville remembers a 1950s summit between the King of the Blues and the King of Rock and Roll. Stay with us. This is Music Inside Out. I'm Gwen Tompkins. We're exploring songs from the 1950s and 60s that we're calling mid-century modern. Saxophonist Charles Neville came of age in the 1950s during the golden era of New Orleans R&B. But he couldn't leave New Orleans fast enough. And at the age of 15, he joined the house band for the Rabbit's Foot Minstrels, a traveling show that toured the South.
It was the circus. That's exactly what it was. I remember the first day I was there, we had to, when we got the gig as the house band in the blues tent, we had to put up the tent.
Oh.
You know, with there were the people, the roustabouts who did it, but we had to help with that. And as they put up the tent and they hung these two banners behind the stage, and I recognized the picture of Bessie Smith with the ostrich plume. And I asked one guy, well, who's the other woman? He said, oh, man, that's Ma Rainey. She the one who brought Bessie Smith to the Rabbit Foot. And then he started telling me all about Ma Rainey.
Wow.
And I said, okay, yeah, that's cool. And again, you know, we were playing rural areas of the South where black folks didn't have access to Ringling Brothers. Mm-hmm. So, you know, there were the acrobats. There was the bareback rider. There were elephants. There was, you know, all of the stuff you see in the circus. And there was the sideshow, the freak show, where there was the wild man from Borneo.
The wild man from Borneo?
Borneo with the bone in his nose and the big old raggedy looking afro.
And he was like a stockbroker on the side, right?
Yeah. A tap dancer.
Exactly. And so where in the act was the House Rockers?
We were the house band in the blues tent.
Okay.
Actually, it was the entertainment tent, or they called it the blues tent, because there were these dancers. There were these fabulous dancers who were like, could have been in anybody's ballet company, but there were no black ballet companies back then. And they did these amazing dances in the choreography that I never forgot. One was the set was like a little African village with little round grass huts. And it starts off with guys with drums sitting around in a semicircle facing the Hudson. There's a seat like a tree trunk with the back up high, you know, carved and everything. And this old man comes out, the drums are playing, and he comes out walking with his staff all bent over, and he sits there on that seat, you know, he's all bent over there, and like, he's got on a long robe and like a hood that kind of covers his face. And so when the drums are playing and a girl comes out dancing, and she's dancing around, she's got on the grass skirt, and she's doing this really cool dance, and she dances around him, and she touches him, and she dances off. When she touches him, he raises up a little bit. Then another girl comes out, and she does her dance all around the clearing where the drums are, and she goes, and she touches him. He straightens up a little bit more. I think by the time the fourth or fifth girl touched him, he jumped up and threw off the robe, and he's this muscular young guy, and he starts doing this acrobatic dance.
This is the story of the May-December romance, right?
No, of the effect of the female energy on the poor old man.
Exactly. Yes. Have you ever wanted to be a dancer?
I did dance a little, you know, back then. I mean, I really admired the tap dancers. Oh, another thing on the Rabbit Foot Minstrel Show were these great tap dancers. And there were these two guys, Peg Leg Moffat and Peg Leg Bates, who had those old pirate peg legs. And they were tap dancers.
What?
And they were amazing, yes.
Really?
Yeah, Peg Leg Moffat and Peg Leg Bates.
How did those two meet?
Yeah.
You have to wonder. Hey, we got something in common here.
But I remember years later, I think it was Peg Leg Bates had a place, a lodge in the Catskills where, you know, an entertainment place.
Yeah. Well, so it was in this capacity that you ended up backing up so many of the great early R&B stars, you know, people like, you know, Little Walter and Big Maybelle or Jimmy Reed.
Well,
that's where I met some of them. We actually traveled with Jimmy Reed for a while as his band, but with the others, Big Maybelle, Big Mama Williams, thought it was after Rabbit's Foot.
Come on over, baby. Whole lot of shaking going on. Come on over, baby. Baby, you can't go wrong. Ain't nobody faking. Whole lot of shaking going on.
These are wonderful voices, wonderful talents, but they also led very tragic lives in many ways. I mean, very, you know, a lot of struggle with addiction, a lot of disappointment. You know, Johnny Ace ended up playing a really stupid game of Russian roulette that ended badly.
Yeah, that was crazy. He was in at Watts Anderson's Blue Room in Tampa, and they're in the dressing room, and he's got the pistol doing, playing the Russian roulette. And that was sometime around Christmas time. And he left there and went to Texas, and a couple of days later, I met Johnny's dead.
And this is a guy who left us with such beautiful music, you know, Pledging My Love and, you know what I mean, just beautiful songs, you know?
And, you know, he had a piano player, a guy by the name of Paul Mundy, who sang like Donna Washington.
Really?
Yeah.
It was my mistake when I fell in love with you. My mistake.
another thing about back then, the stigma that people put on the gay people now wasn't happening back then, especially in the black community and the black entertainment community. Because you know, all of those doo-wop groups, most of those guys were gay.
Yeah.
You know, and the dance troupe that I was telling about with Rabbitfoot, those are mostly gay guys. So Paul Mundy, he would have people falling out and crying, and said it was he was really had such an emotional voice.
When I gave you my heart, it was my mistake. When I thought I was so smart to say that we would never part, it was my mistake.
Charles Neville, when you were in the Navy, you spent 2 years in Memphis?
Yeah, that was the only place I went. There were all of these clubs and all of, you know, these blues cats playing. Ma Rainey had a joint there on Beale Street. And one of the people I met there and got to like him, he was really a cool guy, was Elvis Presley.
Really?
Really, he hung out on Beale Street. And, you know, he was like a musician, he was not the entertainer. And in 1957, the Memphis Cotton Carnival, which was kind of like a Mardi Gras thing where they would have the Cotton King and the Cotton Queen and have the parade that would go down to the docks, to the warehouse where they stored the cotton and we go out on the boats. And the Cotton Carnival Ball was held there. So the theme of the Cotton Carnival Ball that year was the King of Rock and Roll meets the King of the Blues. So it was Elvis Presley's band and B.B. King's band. Stage was in the middle of the hall, black audience on one side, white audience on the other. But backstage, Elvis and B.B. hanging out and the flash bulbs going off every second.
Amazing.
I've seen one picture, and that was in B.B. King's autobiography. And the caption said, B.B. King and a friend.
You know, understatement really is best. And a friend and all. But it's true. It's, it, you know, it's amazing what you're describing, because you're describing this world in which when you go out on stage, you're playing a part in a way that you're accepting segregated this and segregated that and all that. But once you get off that stage, you know, I mean, the camaraderie that happens between musicians, irrespective of race, is real.
Correct.
Yeah.
Correct. And, you know, even here in New Orleans, like in the Dewdrop, where the police would go in and arrest the white kids who were in there and charge the guys with suspicion of narcotics and charge the girls with soliciting for prostitution and have their parents come and get them out of jail, that discourage them from coming hanging out in the black joint.
Yeah, well, that would ruin your reputation back then, to, you know what I mean, to be charged with solicitation for prostitution, a woman, you know?
Yeah, well, back then, you know, the way it wasn't a charge that went on their records. They were could be held 72 hours on suspicion. And so that's what it was, suspicion of soliciting for prostitution, suspicion of narcotics.
So I'll shake you to your shoes, make you think twice
about
going
back.
Are you serious?
Yes.
Good for them.
They came back, and that's why Frank Pena...
The owner.
Went to court, yes. He went to court because he looked at the segregation law, which said that any business owner had the right to grant or refuse service to whomever he chose. So he said, well, if I want to serve the white people in my joint, I should be able to under the law. So he went to court, filed the suit, and won.
The Dewdrop won.
So the cops couldn't come in there anymore. But they'd wait outside.
Man, you're living with rules on top of rules.
And when the white kids came out, same thing. They'd arrest them and charge
them. Gee, it's incredible. I don't know if young people today have a true understanding of what it was like during the years that you're talking about. You know, movies don't do this justice.
Right. Well, you know, that's one of the reasons that I get called into the schools up there in Massachusetts to talk with the kids about this. And some of them still don't, you know, find it unbelievable. And I get asked the question a lot about, well, how can you be so pleasant and talk about that stuff and be laughing? And the laughing about it, you know, it was so ridiculous, the stuff that was happening.
Charles Neville later became a founding member of the Neville Brothers. He now lives in Massachusetts and leads a group called, what else? The New England Nevilles. Here he is with Yusufa Sidibe, and the song is called Africa. Coming up, the French Elvis Presley. Stay tuned. I'm Gwen Tompkins, and this is Music Inside Out. We're talking about music from the 1950s and 60s, when American tastes were more continental. After World War II, French language songs often played on American airwaves by Edith Piaf, Eartha Kitt, Blossom Dearie, Maurice Chevalier, Nat King Cole, and others.
Gone and got the blues in Paris. Paris blues called agité. How can I be blue? Paris, easy, 'cause you're far away. Can't lose this blues, this agité.
Cellist Helen Gillet says her father's family in Belgium introduced her to even more mid-century modern music, en français.
When we hung out with my Belgian family, it was a lot of, listening to, Johnny Hallyday is this, like, big pop star in France.
Sure.
My aunt loved him.
J'en ai vu beaucoup, dis-toi, de ville en ville. Mais jamais sur mon chemin une fille comme toi. Trouver mieux cela me paraît difficile. Laisse-moi te dire qu'il en existe pas. Car pour moi, tu es la seule.
But then, you know, my cousins were all, my generation was listening to a lot of electronic music and a lot of like Air, that band Air.
Yes.
Thank you. yeah, there's a lot of that electronic influence in European music of my generation. So I listened to a lot of that over there too. And then I found Prince in Brussels when I was 11, and that's a rap. Yeah, no, it's interesting. The old and the new. Like my father's generation listened to that old French music, and that really has been a nostalgic sort of thing for me.
What is it about the Velvet Underground that draws you?
Well, that amazing viola sound, you know.
Who played viola in that band?
John Cale, the fabulous viola player. He stretched the viola, you know, he had this way of playing that was very, it was like kind of out of tune, and it was kind of a punk rock, it's a punk rock sort of attitude that kind of goes with some of that subversive, like counter to the polished world, classical pop, you know, world, like that underground.
Yes.
Myriad choice of his fate set themselves out upon a platform to choose. What had he to lose? Not a ghost bloody country all covered with sleep where the black angel did weep. Not an old city street in the east. Gone to choose.
I think the Velvet Underground recorded a lot, and Lou Reed loved the approach of just kind of reciting his words and having the band sort of just play for a long time, and it was this whole session, seance-y kind of session that then would yield a song. I like that because it's very honest and, you know, it's very very in the moment. And but no, John Cale's sound, and he did a lot of avant-garde jazz stuff too, and he's still involved in a lot of the music art scenes around the world. But his sound, that gritty sound, just spoke to me because I'm a string player too.
You do a Velvet Underground cover of the song Ride Into the Sun?
Yes. Yeah, it's kind of a B-side of an album, and not a more well-known one, but definitely.
What drew you to that particular song?
You know, it's really bizarre. I was in a club in Lawrence, Kansas, and playing an improvising gig, but it was like a punk rock club, and it was really gritty, and it smelled like sweat, and it was loud, and our drummer was loud. We were all loud, and again, that gritty energy sort of, I was tapping into that, and I just started rocking out on this chord progression. I realized, oh, this is a chord progression to Ride Into the Sun. And I mean, you know, it could have been a lot of songs, honestly, but then I just sort of like weaved it, those lyrics in, and then it sort of over time became a cover of that song. So it really came out of a spontaneous improvising gig that I felt the need to sort of bring the rock and roll energy. I think that club in Lawrence, Kansas. Lawrence, Kansas is why Ride Into the Sun happened for me.
Looking for another place for someone else to be. Looking for another way to ride into the sun. Ride into the sun. Ride into the sun. Ride into the sun. Ride into the sun.
That's Helen Gillet with Ride Into the Sun. The Velvet Underground released the song in 1970, too late for our mid-century modern motif. But in performance, Gillet and her cello have found a wrinkle in time. That's also true of Herlin Reilly. He's comfortable in any era. He's a drummer, which means he always keeps good time. Reilly grew up in one of the great musical families of New Orleans. His grandfather played with Louis Armstrong. As a child, in the 1950s and 60s, many of the songs Reilly heard were homemade.
had an Uncle Willie, he, my grandmother's brother, he would make up all these kinds of songs and stuff and sing to us, like stuff that he would just make up. You're bound to look like a monkey when you get old. Oh, yes, you're bound to look like a monkey when you get old. I can tell by your knees, you've been climbing them coconut trees. You're bound to look like a monkey when you get old.
Riley talked to us about his long career in jazz, spanning two centuries with Ahmad Jamal, the Jazz at Lincoln Center Orchestra, and as a solo artist. But when we said goodbye, we ended up where else? Right smack dab in mid-century modern with a song from 1960.
Thank you so much for having me, Gwen. I really, really appreciate being here. Thank you so much.
What would you like us to go out on? What song? Or would you like to play something for us to go out on?
Whatever you'd like.
Well, since you're here and the drums are here, it's always nice to, play a little music.
Play a little music, huh? Let's see what I can come up with this time.
All right.
You want to start me off with something?
Oh, my word. How about the blues?
Let me see. How can I play some blues on the drum set?
That's the question I want to ask you.
Let me see, I'm trying to think of another.
Tell Automatic Slim, tell Razor Totin' Jim, tell Butcher Knife Totin' Annie, to tell Fast Talkin' Fanny. We gone pitch a ball down to that Union Hall. We gone rumpin' Trump till midnight. We gon' fuss and fight till daylight. We gonna pitch a Wayne Dang Doodle with you all night long. 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 We gonna pitch it with you Wayne Dang Doodle all night long.
Are the real deal. Earl and Riley. And
fans, you've been listening to Music Inside Out. Our show is produced by Lynette Johnson, Garrett Pittman, Steve Panacek, and Jason Ryan. Music Inside Out is produced in partnership with WWNO. For more information about our guests and our full shows with Herlin Reilly, Helen Gillet, Charles Neville, Nadja Salerno Sonnenberg, and Walter Wolfman Washington, go to our website at musicinsideout.org. And while you're there, check out our short film, Cavemen and Kittens. We made it just for you. Don't forget to follow us on Facebook and Twitter. I'm Gwen Tompkins, and this is Music Inside Out.
Major support for Music Inside Out comes from the Historic New Orleans Collection. Music Inside Out also receives support from the Ruth U. Fertel Foundation, the New Orleans Jazz and Heritage Foundation, the Rosa Mary Foundation, Baba Jim Istanbul Studios and Mastering, Adam Newman Studio, and WWNO. Donations to Music Inside Out are tax deductible, thanks to our partnership with the National Performance Network. For more information on how you can support our program, please go to our website at musicinsideout.org/support.